On Midwest Week, why Duke Slater deserves to be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. I'm Herb Trix, and my guest this week is Roger Ruthart, editor of the Dispatch and Rock Island Argus. So to get started, Roger, what prompted you recently to write about Duke Slater?
Well, I think sort of a lot of different things coming together at the same time that mm-hmm. sort of encouraged that. The first thing was the original story by Dave Hoff from the Tribune. Kind of ironically, I was in Chicago when that came out. Otherwise, I might not have seen it. I was visiting my son, who also writes for the Tribune. And so I saw the story, and I knew that Slater had played for the Independents, and there was, you know, some mention of it in there. But it was really focused more on getting him his just due for, you know, what he had accomplished as a professional player, and then going on to be a coach and a judge and some mm-hmm. other things that, you know, really sort of highlighted his life. That sort of prompted my thinking that, well, you know, this would be, it'd be fun to run this story mm-hmm. but have this second story that ran with it that sort of went into more detail on mm-hmm. his years in Rock Island. And then right after that, the effort came along and that was announced to try and turn the fire station at Douglas Park into an NFL museum and honor some of these early pioneers of the league, and the fact that the first football game ever played in the NFL may have been played in Rock Island, depending on whose measurement you use and what time each game started.
Yeah, what time of the same day.
Right. And that effort, is really encouraging. There's a group of guys that are working really hard against, I think, perhaps insurmountable odds trying to deal with a conglomerate like the NFL, but mm-hmm. And the Hall of Fame. But I applaud their effort and support it any way I can. But I just think, you know, those efforts and sort of revitalizing the overdue nature of Duke Slater's consideration, you know, all coming together, maybe can sort of help each other. And so that, you know, it took me a while to get the pieces together, and, you know, kind of tough when you have a newspaper to put out every day to get something researched and written. But got a lot of help from Simon Herrera, who runs the RockIslandIndependence.com website. It has just a wealth of information there in terms of old clippings and newspaper ads and things like that. So, and then Neil Rosendahl's website and his book and things like that, which are really much more sort of University of Iowa / Duke Slater focused, but nevertheless, a lot of great research that he had done. So that made my job a lot easier, and mm-hmm. you know, the outcome was what we had in Sunday's Dispatch Argus.
Now, Slater was from Clinton, correct?
Correct.
And played for
yeah.
Clinton High School.
Yep.
And also the University of Iowa. And you mentioned your story played without a helmet.
Yeah, the funny little story about that was, I guess back in those days, the high school football teams didn't supply the equipment, and so Slater wanted to play football and told his parents, you know, he needed shoes and a helmet. And they said that they could only afford one or the other, and so he chose the shoes and played without a helmet.
So this was around 1920, yeah, 1918, somewhere there?
Maybe 14, I think. I remember the exact year. But, yeah, so the sport was a lot different back then, and everybody was playing with not too many pads. So so they didn't, you know, hit quite as hard because you could hurt yourself. But but yeah, and it sort of went on from there. And there's another little story about how later on when he played in the NFL, they were told they had to wear helmets, so he'd wear it for the first play and then throw it down and played without it the rest of the time. So
maybe it was sort of more like rugby at that time.
Yeah, I think perhaps, yeah.
And the players weren't anywhere near as big as they are now.
No, he was like 6'2" and considered big. So
yeah. Now, was he possibly the first black football player for the University of Iowa? We have any way of knowing that?
That I'm not sure about. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's probably a way to find out, but I don't have the answer to that question. But mm-hmm. Certainly he was well thought of at Iowa, and part of the issue with getting him to come and play in Rock Island was that Iowa also wanted him to coach their line. So he originally wanted to, you know, coach during the week and play on the weekends, and the Independents said, no, you have to show up for practice. So he decided to play pro football instead.
Okay, and so remind us, the Rock Island Independents are one of the first teams in what would become the NFL.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they played, you know, the Decatur Staleys, the Chicago Bears, the Cardinals, the Green Bay Packers, you know, some of the teams that we've heard about that existed or still exist now. And unfortunately, they didn't make it through, I guess, through the 1920s, but they had a great run while they were while they were there and played all their games at Douglas Park.
And he went on after his years with the Independents and then the Cardinals for several years.
Right, 5 years with the Cardinals, I think it was.
And then after that, he went on to something much different.
Yeah, well, he was one of the, in fact, the NFL delayed its ban on black players until after Duke Slater retired. And then when he retired, I think it was 2 years later, they put their racial ban in place. So he actually coached for several years all black football teams because, like baseball or anything else, they formed their own leagues and kept playing. So he did that for a while, went back to Iowa, I believe it was, and got his law degree and became a lawyer and later a judge.
A judge in Chicago.
Yeah.
So what? How good was he? In other words, why should he be in the NFL Hall of Fame, do many people think?
Well, a lot of it is anecdotal. It's people like George Halas and Red Grange saying he was the greatest they ever played against and that he deserved to be there. There aren't a lot of individual records for linemen, but there are some records of, you know, yards gained and touchdowns scored by some running backs while he was on the field for every play of the season. So certainly it can be presumed that he was an important part of some of those records, which were set back in the 1920s and still stand today. So I think you can make a great argument for his consideration, and plus the fact when the first few, you know, classes were announced for consideration into the Hall of Fame, you know, he was among those names. So
yeah, along with some guy named Jim Thorpe.
Yeah, the people back then, you know, had seen him play and presumably knew his talents. So.
And then why, so apart from the racial ban at part of the time, why hasn't he been in the Hall of Fame all these years?
I can't say why, you know, when he was one of seven players named and six others were elected, why that happened. But certainly I think he would have eventually couldn't have been overlooked. Except for the fact that right during in the early 1970s, when he was under consideration, they changed the process of how people were elected to the Hall of Fame. So he went from being, elected by his peers to being elected by the old-time committee of sports writers. And, of course, as the years go along, there are less and less of those sports writers who, number one, know who he is or, more importantly, ever saw him play. So it becomes tougher as time goes on, I think, when you're a real old-timer to really get consideration.
So what happens next? Is there a vote coming up? Will the people that make these decisions care if we send them postcards or emails or something about Duke Slater?
Well, I'm sure there will be some kind of lobbying campaign. We wrote an editorial that listed all of the contact information for the members of the Old Timers Committee. So anybody that certainly wants to get involved, the information is available at the Dispatch Argus website or in our paper last Sunday. And I think, you know, I think there will at least be an effort made and hopefully he'll be included in the, I think there's a nomination next spring for the class of 2019, and hopefully he'll be among those named and get voted in.